All right, we are back with another installment of the Work Week After Hours here with my co-host and good friend, Steve Cadigan. Steve, we're back, buddy. How are you?
I'm good. So we're not going live today. We're going to keep this in the inner sanctum of the editable version of our podcast.
Well, the last one was an absolute disaster. My audio cut out, my video cut out, cut back on. I had no idea what was going on.
That was the one we needed to
screens
edit.
Screen was bouncing around. So if you actually saw that one, just chalk it up to Shane's an amateur and has no idea what's going on. So
we have absolutely fired every member of our technical staff, which is nobody.
Well, actually, I was going to say, based off of this episode, we did not fire them. We took accountability for it. Shane That's owned right. it. I took a pay cut and I'm fixing it. Right. I hired the person to do that and I'm taking accountability. I'm going to retrain them. So,
it's so interesting. Segues Shane, sorry to interrupt, but on a tangent, but it's also something I think we can all relate to is how many of us became the IT support for elderly members in our extended family over the pandemic, and having to teach my 85-year-old parents and aunts and uncles how to sign in, how to even operate on a Zoom remotely, okay, is just a great reminder of how unintuitive so much of the technology is that we're using today. When I'm telling my mom, just unplug it and plug it back in. She's like, why? Yeah. Well, if it's not like that, and our children just get that. Our children are playing with these devices, not expecting them to work perfectly, recognizing that, you know, software is a work in progress. It's never finished. And a, you know, more senior community is like, well, why are they letting us use this if it's not working?
Yes. Yes. It's the expectation of, it's kind of like getting in a car, right? You get in a car, you expect it to start. I put gas in it. You've done everything you're supposed to do. You know, it's plugged in. It's getting power. It just should work, right?
Yeah.
And you know, there's nuances to the world, right? There's nuances to technology and, you know, how we navigate those things. And, you know, I guess that's really aligned with what we talk about on here with the future of work. And, you know, you have to realize that something that worked yesterday may not work when you get to work tomorrow.
And this is a great lead into what I really want us to talk about today, which is leadership and the expectation that we all bring, which vary dramatically, of what we should expect from a company or an employer. And you know, we're all expecting different things. I was talking, I had a great conversation with a colleague yesterday, and he's saying, you know, one thing that we're not talking about is all these young new entrants into the workforce. They want to go in the office. They want to be around people. They want to build relationships and meet people and find their spouse or, you know, and connect and feel like they're making a contribution, and they're not sure how to do it. And so they're pulling for societal reasons, not necessarily just professional reasons. And that, you know, this whole mix-mosh reality that we're all kind of stumbling, fumbling, bumbling our way through right now is really interesting. But we all come to the table from differing perspectives around what we expect when we started a company or work in a company, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and everybody, you know, it's kind of like being married, right? You have a different background than your spouse. You went to a different church. You got a different education. You lived in a different community where certain things were acceptable. You have different rules that you play Uno by, different than what they play, you know, all these different things in life. And, you know, there's compromise and there's a lot of things that happen, right? To get to, I guess probably the best word to put it is a harmonious march forward. Right. And, you know, by doing that and by being flexible and doing that, I think a lot of people are afraid of like change and new because it feels stressful. because we're we're brought up in a very safe environment. When it comes to our career, we're told you go to high school, get good grades. You go to college. Right. When you get college, hey, we'll help you get one of these jobs. I mean, we all remember, we know those things of like, you're looking at jobs when you're in high school to figure out a career based off of how much money it's going to make and do I like doing it, right?
Right.
And now we're just in a world where that's not the case, and you don't even need to go that route. You can actually bypass that now, in an acceptable way. And
Yeah, and the roots of this are deep. I was asked yesterday to help a gentleman who a very respected high school locally here, Sarah High School, the high school that graduated Tom Brady. A friend of a friend has taken on a job of helping build a program, if you will, that connects alumni to students, that brings in people in the world of work, to sort of help prepare high school students and the parents of high school students, maybe parents of the oldest child is in high school, so they don't have any kids in further, you know, down the continuum of high school or careers. And, you know, they're like, hey, Steve, what would be your vision of something that would be valuable in this community? And I had to really think about this, because my first reaction was, I think I know what I would do, but I don't think the school is going to feel good about that. Because, and this is all tied together with, I think, a remarkably diverse point of view that people are having around what they expect from work and jobs and companies, such as, I think what schools should be preparing for as an employer is the ability for people to learn quickly and adapt to different circumstances. And what we're telling most students is conform, don't talk back, you know, you be obedient, stay in line, don't get out of line, don't be different, and don't challenge authority. And you're here so that if you study this, if you study business, you will become a COO, or you study accounting, you will become an accountant. We're not here saying, hey, guess what? The world of work's whacked right now. You're going to have like maybe 13 or 10 different career paths over your journey. Let's get your fundamentals. Let's get your wheels and your tires and your engine of how you think and how you solve problems so tuned that whatever country, industry, size, organization you're in, you're going to rock it.
Yeah.
But that's not what parents want to necessarily. It's not what high school administrators want to hear. So I threw it out there and said, you want me to play ball with you? This is how I see it. And if that's good, let's talk. If not, okay. You know,
yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
I'm not your guy.
Well, so it's funny you bring this conversation up. This wasn't where we planned on going, and we'll get to the story. But I had a conversation recently with someone who's been very successful in business here where I'm located, done really, really well, family business, passed on. And, you know, they were disgruntled when I started talking about the, I'll call them younger generation. I feel like I'm still young, but the younger generation. Well, what they need to do is they need to learn to stick with things, right? And it hit me, like I've thought about this, but as a parent, and I know this is going to be way more progressive than most people want to follow, but if you're constantly pushing a narrative to your kids that they got, you started it, you finish it. I think that creates this unfair view of the world. Because I think if you polled most of the individual contributors at 36 years old, most of them wished they were doing something else. They wished they were working somewhere else. They would like to be doing something different. And we're creating this, we're creating unhappy people. It's Nick, there's a lot, look, this isn't going to solve all of it, but into the education part of it, I've thought about this a lot. And, you know, now most high school kids can earn some college credits while they're in high school. Well, my generation, I'm 42, like I said, my generation was told from our parents, you got to go to college. You got to go to college. You're a waste. I remember my English teacher, my 11th grade English teacher told me, Shane, you're not getting school and you're not paying attention and you're going to become a loser. Nobody's going to want to hire you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a conversation for another day, but, in that, it's like, no. So I think what's happening is we're creating this world now to where what? So, okay, a kid graduates high school and he's already got some college credits. What are the parents saying? Well, you know, since you're already partially away, you might as well go ahead and get your degree. You start what you finish, right? And I think that will eventually change, but as parents, we have to give cover to like, hey, go, if you want to take a year or two or however long you got to do to figure, just go be happy. Just go be happy. Like my ego's not involved with where you go, and school's egos gets involved, right? Because the KPI of a school is who went to what college and where do they work and what's their career. Mm-hmm. No, how about who? Show me the school that has the happiest people, the happiest alumni ever. That's the school I want my kids to go to. Like, show me where they have the best quality of life. Like, go show me. That's what I want. And we don't go off those things, and they're skewed by performance metrics and those things. But yeah, I know I got off on a tangent there. But
and what's interesting about the people who are offering that advice, and maybe I've done it at some point. I know I've received it, which is, you need to focus, you need to commit, you need to put in the hard work, is those people probably wish they didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
Wish they didn't have had to do that earlier in their lives, which is interesting. And so here we have talked about this in an early episode. I don't want to reopen this, you know, this passion that we both have around, you know, what we're really responsible for is building people who are going to make the world better. Doesn't necessarily mean the IQ test scores need to be the same. Doesn't necessarily mean they need to be getting the grades. Did I get a grade in my job? Sure, I got a performance review. But all I cared about was, do I feel like I'm growing? And is that going to get me some more money? I didn't care about, you know, and it's kind of like, I look at it this way, and this is very crude, and it's not, I don't know a better way to say it, but I'm just going to throw it out there, which is, you know, we measure ourselves, you know, we're trying to sort of measure ourselves or get a relative comparison of how we're doing relative to others. But when you get out of school, it's really about who you make better and who wants you on their team. And that's not always about, like, we used to have conversations with employees like, hey, my manager doesn't like me. They put something in my file. I want that out of my file. And I would say, dude, no one's ever looking at your file. So don't worry about that stuff. You know,
and by the way, you should see everybody else's file.
That's right. And by the way, the boss putting that in your file, no one cares what they think anyway. So don't stress. But we're worried about other people's judgments of us. And all this stuff is just very convoluted. You know, the weight that we carry and the burdens that we put on ourselves around, you know, expecting to be judged by others, I think is contributing, Shane, to that sort of like, that overboiling of screw this. I want to go do my own thing. I'm tired of the weight of carrying that from school through work to someone judging me and all that stuff. It's getting, and if I have a choice not to have that, well, I'm doing my own thing.
And if you remember to our past episode where we talked about influencers, and it dawned on me, it's what there's a sentiment with a certain, and I'm not going to put them in an age because it could be 32-year-olds, depending on where you live. There is a sentiment of people are skipping the line, right? It's like, we don't like line skippers. We all get frustrated when we stand in line and we see somebody skip, or like you wave and then this person just showed up and you've been in line for 45 minutes and they just walk right to the front of the line, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Somebody who's a psychologist can probably tell me what that is, but I think there's a version of that within the career world, because I have dealt with that in some, you didn't earn your stripes. You didn't go work in corporate. You don't know what it's like. How can you understand what, like, you like, that's how you feel, but let's have a deeper conversation about this, right? Like we're romantic to these paths that are outdated. Right. That don't lead to where you want it to actually go.
Oh, that's such a beautiful, I'm going to capture that. I'm going to use that. We have romanticized the journey and we've boxed it in a certain way. You're absolutely right. So let's take a look at, like, and think about this in terms of, like, I'm just thinking about presenting this to an audience.
Yeah.
If you got a PowerPoint, you say, okay, over on the left, we've got, you know, Susan. Susan went to one of the best private schools, you know, money could pay for, got into fill in the blank, Yale, you know, university, was valedictorian, did an internship, you got pre-law, blah, blah, blah. Susan has got a pedigree no one can mess with. Okay. Well, then on the other side is, well, Susan really, whose dream is Susan chasing? Is that really her dream? Does she really know who she is? Does she know the 700 ways that she could earn a living outside of the path of, you know, finding out in a few years that law firms and partner track is, like, really brutal and it's
sure.
not as satisfying as she may think or as rewarding. And so someone's going to go, wow, look at that. Versus, you know, here's Jennifer, who was in 15 homes by the time she was 20, you know, had to pay her way to go to community college. Turns out she doesn't test very well, so she got low scores. But she started selling on eBay, and by the time she's 25, is making several million dollars, and she's ready to, you know, looking for investors to start a company. Like, who do you want to put your money behind in today's economy?
Sure.
The person who rode the bus that other people said was the way you should go, or the person who's, like, scrappy, hungry, felt defeat, you know, who's got, you know, scars from all the, you know, tough times that they've had, and they know what it means to fight. That's who the money's going to go to. But that's not how we're writing the script. I think we're going to have to start, you know, putting value in different places. And I think that's really, you know, that's a message that I think that resonate with a lot of people who haven't had the silver spoon. You know, we talked about this an episode or two ago. The majority of Americans were not handed a silver spoon.
Sure.
And they're starting to wake up going, whoa, I got a little leverage here, and I don't have to, you know, follow like a little lemming, you know, I can do my own thing a little bit more, and they're tasting it and they're liking it.
Well, yeah. And I think so to that, right. So I'm like, my story is to the extreme, right. I had all these things happen. There's a lot of things. My story is the extreme, but at the base of that is a person who was born into low income environment, who neither parents, when I were born, neither one of my parents didn't even finish high school. The other one barely finished high school. Neither had a college degree. They both went to college in their 30s. Right. So, so for me, I'm in this environment that said, you don't match, you don't fit. You can't, like there's only a certain piece of the economy that you're allowed to have access to, from jobs or money, because this is who you are. This is who you were born. You're stuck here, right? Now, I'm the extreme to that, but what's happened with the pandemic, what's happened with this whole workquake that's happened, it's happened of people who come from where I come from, who didn't have the extremes, are now seeing this confidence of, like, oh, there's like, it's like you walk outside for the first time and see sunlight and you're like, this is what it looks like out here? Like, I can make I know someone very successful in the marketing world. They've worked locally. They don't get paid. They didn't get paid well locally. Now they're getting paid a Silicon Valley salary working for a Silicon Valley type company, and they're up for another promotion. And I'm like, hey, you need to ask for double what you're getting paid right now. He's like, they're not going to pay that. I promise you they'll pay it. Trust me, they will pay it. And it's like, all of a sudden now he's like, well, wait a second here. He's also doing work on Upwork, was making $175 an hour. Now he's making $250 an hour working side jobs. Like, it's like, well, wait a second here. What do we got going on here? Right. And it's this awakening of, we have to, it's breaking this mold of being romantic to a way. Like, it's like saying, I'm going to be a leader and I'm going to lead you because I've got this history of leadership. Well, if your history doesn't show you evolving, just because you were somewhere a long time or you have 20 years doing something, that means you're actually the leader we don't need. And I know this is probably sounding radical to some of the people that are hiring management and hiring these people, but if you're It's not about you being 20 years senior. It's about, did you evolve and grow? Otherwise, you're still romantic to a way that doesn't work. You're romantic mm-hmm. to a world of work that isn't relevant. You're you won't work well in that meeting when Shane walks in and says, hey, everybody, let's bring out your paper and let's all talk about the things that you said you'd never do. Because you're still romantic. You didn't even make the list because you said, no, I'm telling you right now, absolutely, I've seen it. It doesn't work. We're not doing it. Okay, no problem. No problem. Mm-hmm. But being romantic mm-hmm. to that, and I'm passionate about it because I do carry a bit of chip on my shoulder because I've busted my ass and I've worked really, really hard. And, you know, I've put myself in a very fortunate enough position. And, you know, there's a way to go about it. And that romanticism, I guess that's the word, romanticism yeah. of yeah. this old way. It's time to be romantic about the future and not the past. And that's really, mm-hmm. that's really what it is. So,
right. And anyway, we've talked about this, about that we are romanticizing because it's safe. We're romanticizing it because it's known, because it doesn't upset our power position or threaten our income. That model that we built to succeed in. You know, it's like, I remember I was 16, Shane, or 15. Yeah, I was 15. My parents said, hey, your sister, when she was your age, she spent a year in France in your high school. My dad was the headmaster, had an enormous, enormous opportunity to get a free private education because my dad was a minister and we didn't make any money, but because he was now head of the school, you know, had a free ride. Like, hey, we can send you to France for a year. Are you ready for that? I'm like, oh, hell no. You know, I'm not leaving sports and this and that. But I said, what I will do is if we can do it, I'll spend the summer there. You know, and I'd taken a year or two of French. So, you know, I was, you know, somewhat, you know, basic conversationally, you know, capable. Boy, that was so hard, Shane. Like people looking at you like you don't even like they could talk to me. I didn't know what they were talking about. And just thrown upside down, scared, missed my family, different time zone. This is pre-end of the Cold War. So, you know, there's not Americans flying around everywhere. People lives. You know, probably 1979. So a while ago. But that experience, man, was one of the greatest things. And I regret to this day, very few things in my childhood. I regret I had a choice to spend a whole year there and I didn't do it. And I should have.
Yeah.
But yeah. that, you know, who invites that kind of craziness when you're 15? Nobody does. Like, you know, it's my friends. It's my
community. Naturally in you, though. That's just naturally in you. It's your environmental influence of, you know, being okay to being not afraid of the unknown, right? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. and realizing that, you know, you were talking about being scared of the future and people being stuck in old ways, when in reality, those people don't really understand. It's almost like right now, you know, it's like looking at two doors, and behind the door of the past is what's going to kill you, metaphorically speaking, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's behind the door of the future is actually less stress and less, you know, these things. And the more you keep knocking on the door of the past, the less time you're, because it's going, like, there's one thing that we have a saying here in the South, right? I'm actually going to make
here
an
we
amendment.
Go, man.
I'm actually going to make an amendment, right? There's only yep. two things in life that are guaranteed. That's death and taxes, right? I'm actually going to add a third. There's three things in life that are guaranteed: death, taxes, and the future, right? It's going to happen. It happened. Mm-hmm. It just happened.
Right.
Right. So if we know it's coming, looking back and saying, well, back to these kids, these young kids, you know, they're skipping the line. They're not putting in the work. They need to stick it out. I heard it today about NFL coaches, and there's a lot of former players wanting to get in and be assistant coaches. They're like, no, they've got to get coffee. They got to sleep on the couch. And they're like, no, I played the game for 15 years of Pro Bowls. I know more about the game than most of the guys sitting in this office. No, I'm not going to do that. If you want to hire me, mm-hmm. hire me to be a coach, not to go through this. Like I got my education, right? I lived mm-hmm. life. I got my education. I was hands-on, and you know, we gotta be, we got to break the romanticism up a little bit. I know to kind of shift gears a little bit, unless you had something else you wanted to add.
Let's shift. And let me take what you just said, which I think is a great springboard into this. We're coming into this call, and I really have a few recent examples of companies behaving in a way that really jumped off the page to me. We talked about what happened at Better.com. Shawgarg's CEO, in letting people go, referring to them as those people, like their performance is in no way tied to his leadership choices, the decisions of the managers of those people, like they were, you know, taking a chapter from my, you know, history course in college, you know, sinners in the hands of an angry God. Like, you know, it was just a matter of time before they're going off the rails. And what, look what they did. Yeah, they just screwed up and they got to go. And I'm like, whoa, who hired those people? You did. Who should have been accountable for their success? You. Are you taking any ownership for that? None. And that was really interesting to me. And we talked about it here, and I've, you know, posted a bunch of thoughts on that and got a lot of energy in the community about it. And then last week, ByteDance, the Chinese run holding company for TikTok and some other properties, announces that they have reduced their learning and development team of somewhere between 100 and 200 people. And, you know, they're trying to let them, you know, replace them in the organization. But the way they said it, and you can find this on a CNBC post that I threw out there, was those people are no longer acting in alignment with the company's vision, mission, and values. And therefore, we have no use for them anymore. It was like a disassociation of what they're doing with anything that the leaders should feel accountable for. And, you know, part of me, first, are you talking about we as us, you know, they are us, we are them. Why are you talking about those people? Like, no, it's you, bro. It's you and your leadership and your team that facilitated that team just driving right off the cliff. And they trusted, I believe most of those people, if you put them in an exit interview, said, hey, did you have any sense that you're on your own here, that if you screwed up, like you were going to be like shot and was put out to the woodshed? They probably go, no.
Well, those people also went through performance reviews. This didn't happen overnight. Bad performance just doesn't show up when you show up for the earnings call, right? Like that's not how this works, right? There's tendencies. So where's the accountability of someone saying, we messed up. You are responsible for your actions, but we are responsible for us as a whole. And again, it just goes back. It is a unbelievably missed opportunity in this world, in this time, where all you had to do was take the high road, be the better person, be the better company, and say, we've made some mistakes. We've made some hiring missteps. We're going to correct those internally. We're doing some restructuring, and we're also helping those that we failed. We're going to help them transition to other places of employment. That little statement, it would send shockwaves through the talent pool right now. Shockwaves. Because we've seen what's now happened with Better.com. I sent you an article late last night. Now top executives are bailing. They're out. Yeah, they're posting about it on LinkedIn. They're so out. Surprised by that. Yeah. Shocker. Right. Shocker. People don't want to work for people who are assholes. Right. Like, I hate to put it that way, but it is.
Yeah.
It is.
Right.
So
I agree with you, Shane. And listen, if someone comes to me and says, hey, Steve, you know, we are going to have to let some people go. It's probably going to be learning and development people. But how do we do that? And by the way, in an era where it's all about growing your people, that's the team you want to take out. I don't even want to go there because that's a whole nother subject. But I would say we don't even need to say we screwed up. We could take a position a little softer and say, you know what? we've been growing really fast and we took our eye off the ball. And we've been investing in some places that probably we shouldn't have invested in. So we're going to repurpose. We're going to change that. We're going to go all in on trying to help the people that are impacted here. Can all of you please help those people too? Because they're good people and they took a bet on us. So we owe it to them to help them. That's all, you know, like, hey, it's crazy. We've never been, you know, many of us have never grown a company this fast. And the problems we have are great because we're so successful, but it took our eye off the ball. And so now we're going to put our eye back on the ball. And here's the decision that we've made. Nope. Didn't take that. Didn't say it that way.
How quick would they have been able to call TechCrunch and say, hey, this is what's happening. This is what we would like to put out there. And we want to make sure that these people we're letting go are getting a job. So we've created a website. So I need you to reference that website in the article when you do it. That article would hit, and in 6 hours, 70% of those people would have job offers. Easy.
Right. Right. And think about what Airbnb did.
It's so easy.
I know. And the way Airbnb did it, and it's worth repeating, if you do this the right way, you build loyalty when you let someone go. And they're playing for, we got to look infallible. I'm projecting here. We're going to position this so there's no stink on us as leaders because we have to be infallible, you know, absolutely without fault, beyond reproach. So those people are losers. Now, I've lived in Asia a little bit of a time. You know, the Chinese government owns every business in China, and you can't own a business as an American company. You cannot found a business and do business there unless you give a significant ownership to Chinese leaders. I don't know if people know this. You cannot, you know, any company you see, doing business with LinkedIn, we had to do it. It was 2 years of decision. Do we even want to go there? Because you also have to give all your data.
Yeah.
All your data to the Chinese government, right? It's warehoused in their servers. So you've got what I would say, and again, I'm getting a little bit out of my swim lane and talking about the Chinese government, but it's like, we're infallible. We know all. We are real. You know, we've got the keys to the fortress here, and this is what we're doing. And it's those people that are fault, not us.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And again, it's just an opportunity. It's just a missed opportunity. Like it is. It is the opposite of the future of work. You know, you talked about loyalty. Loyalty, for an individual contributor, loyalty actually only matters once you're gone. Mm-hmm. It's not loyalty while you're here. You're here, and you're not here because of loyalty. No. Micro percentages of people are staying at a company because of loyalty. That's not why people are staying there to work. Mm-hmm. Loyalty only matters with an employee once they're gone. That's when there's loyalty. How are they talking about you when you're not around and they have nothing to gain from you? That's the loyalty. So we have this thing misconstrued of how we think, like leaders, I guess maybe they walk around with these blinders on, thinking that everybody in this 5,000 seat building loves you and they cheer for you and they think you're the greatest human being. You're the most hated human being in there. You're the most disliked person there. That's the truth. So how do we change that? And in doing that, where do people have to get resources and have to start learning and upskilling from a leadership standpoint for the future of work? Not for work of the past, not for the work of yesterday. They have to. And we've got some different things coming down the pipeline, and we'll certainly talk about that on one of these episodes. But
yeah. And I think, you have your expressions that you've shared. I love them. One of the ones I think about when we're talking about this is you cannot get somewhere ahead if you keep looking behind you.
Oh. Right?
You're not going to get to your destination if you keep looking backwards. And it's hard, because so many things are out of our control right now. And this moment in time, and again, this is worthy of us just keeping on the radar in all of our episodes. This moment in time has exposed how weak, unprepared leadership just in general is. And so, you know, message to the wise out there, if you're an organization like, hey, I'm not sure about our leadership. Okay. Well, listen, there's opportunity when you have leaders that are sort of untrained, which is take that opportunity to mold your leader the way you think your leader should be.
Okay, so that's why I want to push back on that a little bit. Maybe not push back is the right word. Is it as much that they're weak and unprepared, or is they're closed-minded? Because most leaders are weak and unprepared. They're human, right?
Sure.
So is it they're just closed-minded, right? Because you have to be open-minded, meaning if somebody comes and says, Steve, we got these problems. This has changed. This has changed. This has changed. This has changed. And I want it to be like it was.
Yeah. It's
contradictory.
Well,
right? We can't.
I would say this. Maybe it's a little bit of insecurity too.
Yes. That's probably the word. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
The worst boss to have is someone who is power hungry and insecure. That is one of the most dangerous cocktails you'd ever see, because they're going to steal credit. They're going to throw you under the bus the minute something goes wrong and say, "What me? Yeah. Well, look at them."
Yeah.
And we've all been around those kind of people. But you're right. It's a moment in time where it's exposed that I just don't think that most companies, and I'm not blaming them necessarily, because we got to be real on this show, but I feel like the world of work is so fast right now. People are not thinking about building long-term leaders. They're thinking about surviving and getting my nut in the next 5 to 10 years and moving on.
Yeah. And on the flip side of that, there are some. We're actually blessed to talk to a lot of people that are saying, hey, no, look, we know, like, we've drank too much of our own Kool-Aid. Come help us, because we need some of that. And I think that's awesome. I think if everybody was closed-minded, you and I would probably go crazy. Just going. So knowing that there is that out there, and knowing people are that. So you're right. The loyalty piece, like, how are we playing towards that? And again, just the whole ByteDance thing. It's a missed opportunity.
Huge missed opportunity. And let's talk about this for a second, because we had a call with a prospective client 2 days ago, and you and I were like doing jumping jacks, cartwheels in our chairs, because we were just blown away by how open and honest and humble these women leaders were. We're talking to three women who are leading this, leaders of this company, and they're talking about, hey, would you come in? Would you just challenge us? You know, we're doing great. You know, we're doing great, but we know we could be better. And, you know, we listened to what you said, and it just really, it sparked a whole bunch of ideas.
Yeah.
And, you know, what did they went around almost like a confessional, like, I've been here 19 years. I've been here like 23 years.
Yeah.
And the newbie was like 15 or something years.
Yeah.
And that was so refreshing for us to have people say, we know there's a lot we don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so rare and so refreshing, but it stood out.
The humility it takes.
Yeah.
And what I would call leadership maturity, right? I think that's called leadership maturity in that, we immediately got on a phone call after that phone call. We're like, dude, like,
I know,
I'm ready to go to work. Like, what can we do right now? Like, we're ready to go. And that gives you and I oxygen for what we do, is being out here on the front lines. That gives us oxygen. And that carried on. Like, we were three more calls down the road, and we're like, what is it about everybody today we're talking to? Everybody's getting it. Everybody, like,
right.
And it's this infectious energy that being open-minded and realizing, hey, here's what we do good. We think we do these things good, but I don't know. We're open for feedback. Like, I'm open. It's just, you're right. No,
that was great. One of the things I wanted to throw in here, and we got to wrap up in a few minutes, but one of the things I wanted to throw in here was this, and as I'm going to admit my admitted bias of sitting here in the Career Candy Store, Silicon Valley, and that's how you see the world that you live in, and mostly I live here, which is people chasing the shiny object, cool, hot company. And here is a firm that you and I spoke to. I'd never heard of them before. I barely knew anything about the industry. And it's not flashy. It's not sexy. There is no, hot, Twitter, Facebook, Apple, Google competitor in their space. And it's been around forever, their industry. And I was like, I would work for those people. I would go there. I would rather my kids went there than some chase the golden ring on a merry-go-round of some Silicon Valley. Hey, we're going to the moon tomorrow. Isn't it so sexy? Aren't we cool? Because those people were real and they really cared. And you just knew like that was such a genuine exchange of authentic, you know, real vibing. And I was like, man, I worry about people chasing the wrong things when they're looking to make career choices.
Yeah. And this was a $15-20 billion company, right? This wasn't like a small, but what did it feel like? It felt like you were in a small family business that like, that's what it felt like. I guess that's the best way to articulate it. I felt like we were all going to, if we were all sitting there together, we would have had some banana bread and some sweet tea.
And they did say they want on the show and we'll get them on the show and we'll have a party for them. But what was so cool was like, you know, they were not like most big organizations and will often say, do you really understand our business? Do you understand our people? Like, if you're going to talk to us, like you need to really, and they're like, we love that you don't know that, but because you know people. And you know human dynamics, and we need to know that better and where the world of work's going versus you're already trying to block our credibility because we don't, you know, we haven't done, you know, we're not fishermen and it's a fishing company. Like, come on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It was so cool. And it's really rare.
Oh, massively rare. Man, what an episode. That was good. That was good. We got a lot in on that one. So, well,
we did.
Yeah, Steve, another good episode. This one's be a little bit shorter. So, our other ones were falling in right at an hour. So this one's 40 some minutes. So, I think that's a wrap on this one, Steve. I'm Shane Howard and I'm with
Steve Cadigan.
And this is the work week.
And my dog is lurking in the background here somewhere.
That's right. He did make a cameo. We'll see you later.
Yeah, this is the work week after hours, man. And we are so happy to have you here. Thank you so much. Keep sending our us feedback on things you top of mind. You may pop up in your feed on LinkedIn any day now with a live show. And really appreciate your support.
Awesome. Cheers.